to channel attention to, we also will be looking at how it has impacted our socioeconomic well-being in Lagos and in Nigeria, if we can get to that. So according to research, Nigeria's climate has been changing with sea level rises and flooding, climbing temperatures, variable rainfall, as well as drought and desertification because of what we know as climate change. That is what we've been experiencing. During the 2020 Flood After Action Review Technical Committee in December last year, 2020, the Director General of the National Emergency Management Agency, Mohammed Mohammed, said something. He said something last year, December. Let me quote. He said, the 2020 flooding killed 68 people. It affected 35 states, including the FCT. 320 LGAs were affected, and over 129,000 people. That was last year. Now, this led to loss of lives, it destroyed houses, it washed away farmlands across the country, thereby having a negative impact on food security. So if you don't know before, I think you should pay more attention to what we call climate change. Now, let's bring it down here to Lagos. In Lagos here, serious negative impacts of flooding are being felt for over two decades. There's no gainsaying that. It's not today. It didn't start today. Now, according to a January 2021 report, research titled K4D Knowledge, Evidence and Learning for Development on Urban Flood Risks, Impact and Management in Nigeria. Let me quote some articles in that report. Since year 2000, the frequency, severity and special extent of flooding caused by rainfall and storm surges has increased since year 2000, with coastal and mainland areas of Lagos experiencing increased flooding during the rainy season. The report also says that flooding in July 2011, triggered by heavy rains, was reported to have resulted in between 17 and 25 deaths. Although one report mentions over 100 deaths and the displacement of approximately about 5,000 people. Now, that is not the case today. It has increased astronomically. At this point, let me bring in my guest here, Mr. Ben Llewelyn-Jones, the British Deputy High Commissioner in Lagos. He joins me live in the studio this morning. Mr. Llewelyn-Jones, good morning to you.
Good morning. Great to be back with you. Great to be here.
It's good to have you here. We're going to just jump right into it so that we can cover as many grounds as possible on the show this morning. Let me start with this one here. And please go to Facebook and YouTube. Let's have your questions in. We'll try and attempt them. What is the scale and extent of the flooding challenge in Nigeria and in cities like Lagos, for instance?
It's immense. I mean, I think, you know, you quoted a series of statistics there. The one that really jumped out at me across Nigeria is I think 25% of Nigeria's rice crop was lost in 2020 due to extreme weather and flooding, essentially. And I think that pattern is something we're going to have to get used to an extent because, you know, some climate change, dangerous climate change is baked in. But what we're also trying to do, the UK and Nigeria and all countries across the world at the Conference of Parties on Climate Change in October, November, is try to reduce, try to stop dangerous climate change, try to reduce global warming to 1.5 degrees.
Okay.
And that's tough, but it's necessary. But at the moment, we've got to deal with the climate change that's baked in, and we've got to try and stop further dangerous climate change.
Is that achievable, though, 1.5%?
It is achievable. It's difficult, no question. And the UK, which is hosting the Conference of Parties, has put incredible effort in, supported by countries across the globe, including Nigeria. It requires big change, really, in our economies, how we produce energy, how we use energy, how we adapt, frankly, to the changing climate. But it's achievable, but it requires big effort now.
That's right. I'm going to come to you on my question earlier about the extent of this impact. This time, let's talk about Lagos.
Sure.
How is it impacting Lagos?
Well, I mean, across Lagos, anyone who lives here and the lived experience of flooding, I think, is, you know, what's the most immediate. I think what we're seeing is significant population displacement. Every time we see floods, we're seeing it in terms of livable space being damaged, being washed away. We're seeing it in terms of, you know, blocked drains, which are, you know, a big part of the challenge.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it, I think, in terms of health outcomes. You know, people living in swamp-like conditions, it's very, very difficult to have the same good health outcomes that people would want. So It's a big problem and a growing problem. And, you know, was it Lagos is sort of landmass 0.36% of Nigeria's, which is, you know, relative to its population, it's very small. And yet it's a growing population. So it's not a problem that's getting smaller, it's a problem that's getting bigger. So we have to act to do something we can about it now.
Now. We'll get to what we can do, but let's quickly look at the factors responsible for flooding in Nigerian cities. What do you think could be responsible?
I mean, firstly, it is a changing climate. We're seeing more rainfall, seeing more erratic rainfall, more extreme rainfall, and that's, you know, that's part of the challenge. Kind of drought then flood, that makes a big problem. The second is around building conditions and where people are building, and that, you know, that is a problem in any big city, a growing city like Lagos. We've done some work with Lagos State Government on guidelines for how urban renewal, how urban resilience can be done. If those are signed off and approved, we hope that can help new business come in and try and build in a way that works to kind of climate resilient architecture and so on. I mean, the third, I mentioned it briefly, is drainage. You know, water's got to go somewhere when it comes down. At the moment, too many drains are blocked with solid waste, with plastics. You know, I've done plastics cleanups in Lagos, and you feel like you make a difference. And you look around and think, goodness, how much plastic is just floating in the lagoon? And
that's right.
How much doesn't make it?
That's right.
So I think all of those factors really... And, you know, it's not, as I say, it's not something that you can kind of, you can avoid if you're a Lagosian. It doesn't matter how rich or how poor you are. This is going to impact you.
How about the attitude of the inhabitants of these cities that experience flooding almost every year? Because I mean, we've discussed this over and over on the show with stakeholders, especially, I mean, the other day I was speaking with people in the recycling business, and they complained about, most especially, how people handle their waste. And that in Lagos is abysmal, waste handling.
I mean, it is a real challenge, you know, and I think, you know, it's also a real challenge in the UK, by the way. It's not...
Really?
We don't have we don't have a perfect record on this by any means. I think the things that that people can do, though, I mean, firstly, you know, more recycling points across the state make a big difference. People feel the incentive to recycle. Secondly, you know, there's a price incentive, to be honest, around recycling too that could be introduced. You know, there's a lot of plastic that's used very cheap. Understand that, but you know, what if people return bottles? What if glass bottles were used? What if companies were encouraged, frankly, to encourage that kind of behavior? That makes a really, really big
incentivize
difference.
It
exactly, you know, make it introduce financial incentives. I think that's a big part of what could make a difference. Certainly has made a difference in the UK. A plastic bag costs 5p now every time you buy it, 5p. You know, it's not a large amount relative to UK economy, but it's an incentive not to use a new plastic bag each time. So I think there are methods and things that can be done, but yeah, it does require behaviour change. And understandably, people have so many challenges in their lives. They think, "Wow, you know, one more."
But, I know, right?
But it's sort of the small plastic bottle you throw in the lagoon becomes a mountain that then blocks your drain, that then floods your house, that then destroys your environment. I mean, you know, it really is that effect, and we see it.
Indeed. If you're just joining us, you're welcome. Mr. Ben Llewellyn Jones, British Deputy High Commissioner in Lagos, joins us on the show this morning. We're talking about flooding in Nigerian cities. We will talk more about Lagos because this is where we predominantly are. But then we'll touch on other issues. Talking about other issues, Mr. Ben Llewellyn Jones, do you think Nigeria has adequate measures in place to contain flooding? Because it looks like this is going to be around for some time now, for some years. Do you think we have adequate measures in place to control this?
Well, I think, I mean, first of all, there are a number of government agencies that are engaged within Lagos and across Nigeria, including in planning and urban planning, but also in emergency management. So, you know, those agencies are doing an extreme effort to try and address these questions. I guess it's about regulations, about measures, but also application of regulations. That's really, really, really important. And, you know, again, I think it can be a struggle for government to make everybody build in the right way or to police some of the other measures that are needed. So that's one part. I mean, the second part is financial. You know, it costs to build in a better way. It costs to be able to make cities resilient to climate change. And I think, you know, we're trying to help in that respect too. But I think thinking about how budgets can work to support and prevent climate change or prevent rather the impacts of climate change, that's really, really important. And, you know, the Nigeria's new nationally determined contribution, its contribution to tackling climate change is a really, really big and important step in that respect. But actually translating that into budgets and decisions, and over time, over 20, 30 years, that's a big challenge.
Mm. Okay. I mean, you mentioned something that really is what I wanted to talk about some more, because I'm wondering that what would be going through the mind of my listener at this point, the British Deputy High Commissioner talking about flooding in Lagos. I mean, we're in business. Why ain't going to talk about flooding in our country? What is the UK's interest in all of this? Why is UK interested in flooding in Nigeria?
Well, I mean, we're interested in tackling the effects of dangerous climate change across the world. We have a strong development partnership with many countries, and particularly Nigeria, for me here in Lagos. And, you know, it's about preventing people who are already, you know, experiencing economic challenge from experiencing more. Because, as I said, you know, the rice crop, 25% of the rice crop disappearing, the impact on food production. So really, we see climate change as a threat to humanity. You know, we'd like to save the environment for itself, but really we're talking about people here, the impact on people, and our commitment to helping Nigeria and growing its economy, and making sure that people can live, you know, decent and fulfilled lives. And that's, you know, climate change is a real and existential threat to that. So
that's right.
You know, part of what
that's
we're doing, for example, is helping with climate resilient agriculture. You know, how do you grow crops that don't get affected by climate change in the same way, or indeed can have a greater yield? So working with IITA up in Ibadan and across Nigeria to try and roll out different kinds of seeds that can work, helping along the value chain when it comes to agriculture, so that, you know, farmers can produce more. We need that anyway, but frankly, produce more in conditions that are just more difficult. So yeah, it's part of our commitment to Nigeria. And also, I mean, climate change is one of those issues that, you know, not one or two countries can fix. You know, either everybody does something or we're all going to suffer. So it's in our mutual interest, shared interest to address.
In terms of climate change and what everybody must do, let me just put this in here. Nigeria is still heavily dependent on fossil fuel. Are you talking to the Nigerian government on this, on how to, you know, lay off gradually fossil fuel?
I mean, that's right. I think, you know, the transition away from fossil fuels is part of the energy transition that we're encouraging in Nigeria. I mean, first of all, in Nigeria, energy access, how many people actually have access to energy? That's a huge challenge. So,
that's right.
You know, we've got to address that. But the energy transition can address that. Renewable energy doesn't depend on the grid necessarily. You can have it in places the grid can't reach. It is cheaper. It depends on sun, often solar. You know, so there are good things about renewable energy that make energy access safer, cleaner, easier. I mean, secondly, it is a transition, so we recognise that, you know, this doesn't happen overnight. But the important thing, I think, when it comes to fossil fuel producing countries is, you know, actually who's buying that stuff in 20, 30 years? A lot of countries are going to stop using it. The UK, for example, the US. So actually producing oil, it works for now, but in time, the economy has to change because there's no consumer for that product. So, you know, as far as we're concerned, it's important to plan for that now, plan for transition, and that's what we're talking about, and really focus on energy access. You know, access to clean cooking, for example, huge issue across Nigeria, particularly in the north of Nigeria. Again, that's not something that's addressed without really addressing climate change and how energy is produced for those people. So definitely a transition is what we need.
Indeed. If you're just joining us, you're welcome. You're free to, we'll be taking your thought at this point before the break, because we're close to taking our first break. So I'm gonna take a few calls to jump on this. If you're a stakeholder in the climate change space, feel free to join the conversation and let me know exactly, you know, what you think about our conversation this morning. 0700 993 993 993. Female only line is 01465 7190. Female only line. And if you're calling me, please let's stick to the conversation this morning. Please do that and be very brief with your submissions. Hello, good morning to you.
Hello, Sharif. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Morning, my name is Adenu Patrick.
Welcome.
From Lekki.
Welcome.
Our guest. Yeah, okay. Now, it's very good topic, and thank you for bringing guests this morning. What impact does traffic have on climate change? Seeing how your traffic is managed in the UK, and seeing, comparing it to the way we also drive here in the part of the world, what impact does climate change and does traffic, the kind of traffic we have here, does have on climate change? Good morning.
Morning, Adenosi Patrick. Let's take one more. Let's add one more to it, then we'll attempt the two. Hello, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sheriff.
Yes, good morning to you.
Sorry.
Yes, please.
Calling from Ikeja.
Welcome.
Yes. So, thank you for bringing the resources.
You said her name is Victoria, right?
Joy. Yes,
Joy. Okay. Welcome, Joy.
Yes. Now, for me, a basic reason for flooding in Nigeria is actually caused by is a man-made thing here. I know we have a climate issue, but for Nigeria, the most important thing is we cause this ourselves. One, in Lagos, the waste management is very, very bad. Okay, so as a result, this has caused lots of flooding here in Nigeria. It's actually not really basically climate change issue. Then again, those who stay in the island here, also, we have this sound feeling thing. And when you sound feel, what do you get in return? In years to come, this is what happens, flood and all that. Then generally, yes, we have climate change issue. So for climate change issue here in Nigeria, I believe it's just like maybe 20%, and every other one is actually what we cause ourselves. So let the government actually do more in waste management, and also our culture in disposing waste to also change. I think by so doing, all these things is also going to work out. But what happens all over the world, there might be climate change and all that. But for us here, I think we actually cause all this. So that's the contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Joy. Thank you for your thought. Mr. Looney Jones, let's attempt the two questions in like a minute.
Absolutely. So, I mean, thanks to Patrick. On cars and traffic, and it's not just cars, I think it makes it's a big contribution, CO2 pumping out of cars, CO2 impacting. But I think really what we need to do is look at, you know, different forms of transport, waterway transport in Lagos, for example. Why are we not using more of that? You know, that would make a big difference. Mass transport. Again, we've been working with Lagos State Waterways on different ways of thinking about that. And then on Joy's question, I mean, I think a lot of it is around waste management. And that would make a big, big difference. But it, in and of itself, it's still not going to be enough. You know, we need to look at how we mitigate against the risk of flooding beyond that. But she's right, absolutely right. You know, if we had clearer drains, if we don't throw the waste into the drains, it's going to make a big difference to our lived experience now.
Indeed. I'm going to take one message from Facebook before the break. Dan Jamal on Facebook says, flood are mostly caused by humans by blocking the waterways, digging up sand and failure of the agents to close the whole dog, building close to river banks as the river can overflow and sweep away everything they labored for. That's Danjuma on Facebook. Lagos, let's go to break. When we return, we'll talk some more with British Deputy High Commissioner here in Lagos. Mr. Ben Llewelyn-Jones joins us live in the studio this morning. If you're joining us, you're welcome. We'll be right back after now.
This is Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
The nation's number one talk station, 99.3 Nigeria Info, Lagos, Nigeria. Good morning to you once again. 8:31 is the time from our studios this morning. We're talking about flooding with the British Deputy High Commissioner, Mr. Ben Llewelyn-Jones, who joins me live in the studio this morning. Mr. Ben, thank you again for coming through. Appreciate it.
Not at all.
All right. Let's start this round with my next question, which is about the... Let's talk about planning, government policy, regulation. How has this affected flooding in Lagos, in Nigeria?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, there are regulations in place. The question with any regulation or any law is how is it applied? Is it applied? And, you know, the pressure on housing in Lagos, but across Nigeria, means it's very difficult for government to enforce the kind of regulations it would want. That would make people not build on floodplains, for example, not build so close to the water, not build in a way that is going to mean that flooding is going to come for them. And I understand that, I do. I guess what we're trying to do, both with our own climate resilience kind of guidelines, is suggest different ways in which, you know, guidelines could be introduced that that could help with building and help bring in private investment. Obviously, people want to build, but they also want to see, they want to make sure that their houses are there after.
That's right.
Buildings there afterwards. And look at the different options for trying to make affordable housing real, because that's the issue. You know, we're not saying people need somewhere to live, and absolutely they do. Mm-hmm. I think that's one aspect. Another aspect, of course, is, you know, why are people flooding into Lagos? It's kind of looking for jobs, looking for work. You know, the more people that come in, the more the pressure is on housing. So making jobs available in places away from big cities
from Lagos
is a big part of it. Mm-hmm. And again, that's very difficult to do in the current economic climate. But again, trying to support the government in different ways of doing that. So, I mean, planning, regulation is a big part of it. It's a massive part of it, but application is huge. It's really, really big.
The enforcement is quite an issue. Yeah. But then we've not really deeply looked into the economic impact of flooding.
It's immense. I mean, you know, studies, and we've you referred to, we've sponsored some research, which we hope will help as people reflect on what to do about the impact of climate change in Nigeria. But, you know, in Lagos State, one of the studies estimates it's about $3.9 billion per year.
My word.
You know, you say that out loud, that's about, what, 4.1% of the state's GDP, or 1% of Nigeria's national GDP.
We lose this.
Yeah, and that's now.
To flooding.
And that's now. And this is not a problem that's getting smaller, it's getting bigger. So the idea that there isn't an economic impact, of course there is, we know that, but it's on the scale that people would not perhaps have appreciated. And that's here in Lagos. I mean, across other parts of Nigeria, the statistics are equally frightening. So, you know, what we do about that now, what we do about preventing that from getting worse,
yeah,
is critical.
What do you think we can do?
Well, I mean, there are different things we can do. I mean, firstly, when it comes to climate smart agriculture, as I say, there are different ways of growing crops. We need to think about that, need to introduce that. The second thing we can do is look at how we build, make sure that we do build kind of more climate resilient houses, buildings, offices. The third thing we can do is look at the financing around risk. So we're working with Lagos State Government on climate insurance so that, you know, when people do experience flooding, there is a quick and simple way to access insurance. You can recover from that. You can rebuild in a different way. You can access finance that makes that not kind of the end of your experience. So,
right.
You know, we're working very hard with the World Bank, UNDP, and Lagos State Government on different ways of doing that. We think that's a really tangible way of addressing that. And then fourthly, helping to raise kind of climate finance that can go into addressing all of these issues, making enforcement work. So this week with the Lagos State Governor, Mr. Governor, looking at a green bond for Lagos State,
yes,
which would be great. Yes. You know, it's a really good tangible way of responding. Maybe even a blue bond, you know, an oceans bond, for example, Lagos, you know, big ocean, ocean state. Looking at ways of raising the kinds of money to make the kind of investment to adapt to climate change, and indeed to prevent further dangerous climate change from impacting on Lagos. And, you know, flooding is the most tangible thing we experience.
But, right,
you know, flooding and drought, that's right, just as bad. The kind right of boom right to bust is right the issue we're dealing with.
We mentioned something in passing just before the break about, I think it was a caller that mentioned sand filling.
Yeah.
Joy was simply just saying land reclamation. It's been everywhere in Lagos. How do you think this has impacted flooding in Lagos?
Yeah, I mean, there are studies that show that, you know, as the lagoon reduces in size, you know, that's that kind of basin of water becomes smaller. So, you know, not at a micro scale because it's a big lagoon, but at a scale for Lagos, that reduces the, where the water can flow to, that comes off the mainland, comes off the island. You know, I think it is having an impact. Again, I'm not saying, you know, we can't build. What I'm saying is how we regulate that, how we make sure we understand the consequences of that, and how we do that in a way that's responsible. And, you know, we all have experiences at different parts of Lagos. I'm going to one on Monday, actually, with the High Commissioner, where we've looked at, you know, the impact of low-lying housing, what's going to happen, and, you know, reflecting, frankly, on the future of that housing and how you know, urban resilience guidelines, for example, could help build in a different way, protect those kind of places. You know, but it is, you know, I'm not immune at all to the challenge people face. They have to live somewhere. You know, they have to live somewhere. So how do we help them live somewhere with dignity that's affordable, that's safe, that's going to mean that they're not flooded out every so often, frankly, very often now.
I mean, I'm glad that you mentioned the issue of, I mean, they have to live somewhere anytime this happens. Do you think we need to do more in terms of providing shelter for people that we know that they're going to experience this issue every year? You know, in some countries, you have shelter provided for people that will probably experience tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, you know, wildfires, and all of those things every year. Do you think we've been able to do enough in providing shelter for people who will most likely get affected every year?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots that's being done now, and I think there's more definitely needs to be done. So working with the Red Cross, British Red Cross, for example, have been working with Nigerian institutions to look at how to help people, where they can go to, you know, anticipating, frankly, the impacts of climate change. I mean, insurance is part of that, right? You buy insurance for a bad outcome to protect you so that you can go to somewhere else, you know. So I think these kinds of temporary shelters and temporary spaces when flooding occurs are essential to just saving lives, to be honest. You know, we're talking about how to save lives here.
That's right.
How to keep people safe when those things happen. So
that's right.
Planning for that, it's got to happen. We need it.
Indeed. I'm going to come to the telephone now, and I'll take your questions from Facebook and YouTube. If you've got any for us, drop them. I will come and take them. But for the telephone lines, 0700-993-993-993. Female-only line is 01465-7190. Female only. That's 01465-7190. WhatsApp is 0809-597-5805. That's WhatsApp number 0809-597-5805 on WhatsApp. I'm going to speak to Anthony right now. Anthony is a first-time caller. Let's speak to him. Anthony, hi. Morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Sheriff.
Good morning.
And good morning to the High Commissioner, too.
Good morning.
Yeah. Okay, so contribution first. I think the real what we get from flooding in Lagos is essentially caused by plastic, by the plastic that clogs up in the drains. And simplistically speaking, you can just say, can we just ban plastic? And it's not even such a viable way, because plastic is a means of commerce. Many people actually's livelihood depends on that plastic. So if I would say something, I'll say recycling has to really be upped. There's some recycling that goes on in Lagos, but it's not enough. I don't even think they're scratching it yet. I would say in every ward, there should be a recycling hub that will really help plastic.
Okay.
If we take plastic out of the way, then we can deal with other things, making the drainages better and any other kind of regulation.
Mm.
I wanted to ask the High Commissioner too, if there's specific initiatives that the UK mission in Nigeria is promoting to help the environment, make states more climate resilient, and all that. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. Deputy High Commissioner.
Yeah, no, thanks, Anthony. I mean, really, really good thoughts on plastic. So, I mean, there are British companies working, for example, around waste here in Lagos, West Africa, ENRG Energy, who are looking at recycling, how to turn that plastic into energy itself, into goods and products. And I think we just need to see more of that, the scale of that. You know, you go to the Lagos dump site and, you know, it's huge, and you think, goodness me, what can we do? And the truth is we need to create a circular economy where plastic goes back into the economy, and it's part of the value chain, you know. So when people recycle, it's not just something they have to do, it's something they want to do because there's a financial incentive to doing it. And that's, I think, something that, you know, again, Lagos State Government's committed to, we're committed to, finding companies to come in and realise that and make that real and make that financially viable. That's a big part of what we're trying to encourage. I mean, secondly, absolutely, more broadly than that, you know, Nigeria's signed up to the Commonwealth Clean Oceans Alliance, which is a good thing, looking at different ways of reducing the amount of plastic that's, you know, thrown away, certainly thrown into spaces that it then clogs up drainage. But to be honest, reducing the amount of plastic, I think that's really, really important. And, you know, one-use plastic, single-use plastic, that's something that across parts of the world is simply being phased out or banned completely. You know, we have recyclable water bottles in the British Deputy High Commission, for example.
Oh.
You know, when I'm lucky enough to go to a gym, when I do, I bring my recyclable cup. I don't use the plastic cups that are there. You know, these sound like small things, and they are, but, you know, small things done by millions of people are massive things. And I think it's that kind of change we need to encourage and incentivize and help with.
Fantastic. We're going to speak with Aigbe now. Aigbe is in First Tack. Oh, I think Aigbe is gone. 8:41. Let's jump on another call. Hello, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sheriff.
Yes, good morning to you.
Yeah. I want to talk about the issue of plastic.
Please go on.
It is ironic that we are in an administration that seems not to understand what to do with plastic. I remember during the first time of the present president, Muhammadu Buhari and the Diagbon, they made it compulsory that manufacturers of plastic, whatever, create refuse bins in so many junctions around where they themselves will have the responsibility of placing those empty bottles in those plastic bins. Of course, the citizenry were encouraged to also use those bins to dispose of plastic. At that time, the streets of Lagos was quite clean.
Okay.
This is the same person heading our government now. And nothing, no idea like that at all. I don't understand what democracy is all about.
All right. Thank you for your thought. We're going to speak to Aigbe now. Hi, Aigbe. Morning. I will lose that call. Aigbe, do call us back again. That was the second time you would call. I will lose that as well. I'm going to try one before I come to. Okay. That's it. It's a cue for me to go to WhatsApp. It's a cue for me to go to WhatsApp. But I see the female lines are blinking. I think we should take one or two female calls. Hello. Good morning to you.
Hello, Atlas.
Oh, yeah. You're here.
Yeah. As regards to the plastic, I don't see there are so much problem. A gutter with sand, when the rain falls, carry a lot of sand on the surface and deposit it inside the gutter. And then even the plastic flow on top of the gutter. But the sand that is in the gutter, water carry it. Instead of the environmental sanitation, so employ labor at least once in a month to remove those sand and hard objects, concrete that the people who are inside the gutter, remove it and pay this less privilege. They don't want to spend money. They are banking it for who? Only God knows. You know, and it is not the plastic that is really the matter now. If you want to get rid of plastic in Lagos, it is just 1 month. Ask every store to have a waste basket in the front of their store.
Right.
No matter how small the store is, anybody that is passing by can drop plastic in there. But they will not make that law in every local government. You know, those common law to affect the environmental sanitation, they ignore it. And then people selling on the main road, is that climate change? You leave your shop, the whole load on the shop, you will pack it on the walkway. One person cannot be quarreling with it. Oh, that is environmental hazard. So the government, you know what they are doing, or the local government with a particular reference to environmental sanitation department.
Right.
They are not doing anything at all.
Thank you, Aigbe, for that call. We're going to jump on another one, a female caller. Hello, good morning to you.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Yes, my name is Grace.
Welcome, Grace.
See, this plastic thing, I've been saying it for the past 6 years now, that this thing is coming, right? This food takeaway that you see everywhere in Lagos.
Yeah.
If they bring a law that will ban it, it's just too much. Because, you know, in the years back, our parents, when they sent us food, we take our bowl, plate to go and buy food. But now, everybody, even if you are working in the office, take a plate to your workplace to buy your food. But now, everybody, this takeaway thing is just too much.
Right.
It's just too much.
Right.
That's what I have to say.
Grace, I think you have hit the nail on the head about the takeaway place that is everywhere in Lagos. That's quite, Mr. Deputy Commissioner, that's quite huge, really. I mean, nobody goes anywhere with their flask anymore.
Yeah, it's a real challenge, isn't it? And again, I say it's not unique to Nigeria, across the world, across the UK. You know, what would you do? How do you reduce the amount of single-use plastic that's used? And there are different ways. I mean, to ban it sounds extreme. To introduce financial incentives so people want to use and reuse plastic, I think that's a more amenable thing to do. Some of it's just around education impact. I mean, I was doing a plastic cleanup and, you know, taking some stuff with my kids and putting it in a pile, and somebody literally watching me do it threw some plastic into the pile.
Are you kidding
that
me?
I had to go and clean up. And I didn't say anything because I thought, well, hey, you know, they don't quite understand what's happening here. But I was thinking, they don't get why that simple gesture means that, you know, you clog up the waterways so that vehicles can't use it. You know, you impact on fishing, you clog up drains. You know, they just didn't see and understand it. So I think part of it's just around socializing people to the impact of that, and then finding different ways to make it affordable for people to recycle and to live their lives, because we want people to live their lives with dignity. We're not trying to make their lives harder.
Absolutely. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning to you.
Hello, good morning, Sherry.
Good morning to you. Good morning.
And good morning to the High Commission, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Thank you. Sir, I want to ask, is it not because sanction is not given to people who break sanitation law, like careless manner of throwing waste everywhere, that when you do that, you are punished for it, then people will learn lessons on how to maintain waste. Like the people are talking of putting waste in some places, you discover that people would deliberately refuse to drop those waste in those bins. Rather, they would drop it in front of the house or throw it to the gutter. Don't you think it's because there is no sanction given to people breaking such law?
Right.
That is why some of these things are uncontrollable.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for your thoughts. Alex is in transit. Alex, morning to you.
Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning.
Yeah, you know, concerning this plastic, I think our people need to be educated. I think it's the level of illiteracy that is just making things to go worse. Can you imagine somebody in a car, in a posh car, after drinking from the plastic, you wind down and then you throw the plastic on the road. And then you find out that a lot of people don't even, they are not literate about these things. If you go to ordinary Ghana here, a bus conductor will chastise you for throwing anything out of their window. So the people needed to be educated so that things, you know, you don't throw, or they should give a steep penalty. So people, it's not just putting their basket in front of shop. What are people that will buy the thing from the shop and then they will go out and then they will throw the thing away on the road? So things like that. People will drink from the this downfall, whatever.
Yeah.
They will drink and throw it outside, you know. So those are the things. We need law enforcement agents. We need people to be sensitized, people to be taught on how to dispose things properly. I think that is the way to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alex. You too, Alex. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Social consciousness is what people are saying towards waste disposal, basically. But let's quickly go back to the issue of flooding. Besides the initiative of the UK government, which you have highlighted earlier, are there other international initiatives working to tackle flooding in Nigeria that we should be aware of?
Absolutely. I mean, we're working in partnership with a number of countries, a number of organizations. The World Bank, for example, had a big program to support Ibadan urban flood management. Been working for years, looking at what can be done. British Red Cross working alongside the Nigeria Red Cross, which is really good. But that's just one example of, I feel like, civil society working with civil society. And I think that's really, really important.
That's brilliant.
And, you know, a whole series of other countries who are looking to see what can be done. And I think this is the point to say that the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, that big summit, President Buhari, His Excellency President Buhari, we hope will be attending, along with other world leaders. You know, the small things we do have to be mirrored by the large things that are done there, to be honest. And the kind of social consciousness that people are talking about here, that's really good. But I think asking the question, you know, where does my energy come from? What impact is it having? How do I get access to energy, but in a way that's not going to cause flooding? You know, these are the right questions that people, citizens, need to ask. You know, how do I make this this Nigerian nationally determined contribution plan actually come into being? What is it I need my government to do? That accountability, I think, is key to making these commitments stick. Because, you know, we've seen dangerous climate change already, if you like. You know, 1.5 degrees could have been 1 degree worth of climate change, but it's not. It's going to be 1.5. It can't be 2. It can't be 2.5. It can't be 3. How much worse can things get? We can't let them get worse. It's what we do now and what we ask our leaders to do that makes a difference.
Is the global community entirely together on climate change?
I mean, I think there's a commitment to tackling climate change for sure. But I mean, the kinds of issues that your listeners have raised, what does this mean for me economically, personally? Yeah. How do I live my life? What about my children? You know, I need them to go to school. I need to use plastic. These are all issues that resonate across the country, whether you're in the US or China or the UK or anywhere. And I guess what we're trying to do is chart a path that shows balance, but also helps people eventually get to net zero. Yeah. And mean that they can live their lives with dignity.
You know, the reason I asked that, sorry, Honourable Deputy Commissioner, the reason I asked that is some people still don't believe in climate change.
Sure. I mean, there are people who don't believe in climate change. I mean, I think they are significantly fewer in number. And I think, you know, one of the bad things about climate change is that we're seeing the effects now. You know, flooding is very real to people, as we've heard.
Yes, it is.
So it's harder to say, you know, well, that's just normal, isn't it? Of course it's not normal. People who know the rains in Lagos say to me, this is not normal. You know, we're experiencing extreme rains at different times. But there are people who don't believe. But I think the scientific community is absolutely aligned. The only question now really, I think, is how leaders, how governments, how people, individuals respond. And that's what we need to do.
Mr. Ben Lueling-Jones, British Deputy High Commissioner in Lagos, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Today.
It's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure having you on the show. It's like time flies by anytime we chat here with you. Thank you so much for coming around.
Thank you again. Bye.
All right. Lagos, Nigeria, that's our show this morning. You can join us again tomorrow morning at 5 for Hot Takes. We will be more Adewunle. I'm Sheriff Quadri. I'll see you again on Monday. Bye for now.
Nigeria Info. We are more than just radio. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at Nigeria Info FM. Check us out on Facebook at Nigeria Info 99.3. Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM and on Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos for live updates as it happens. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.